You're listening to Rambling Business, the only international small business and travel podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking to the big cheese in the Philly cheesesteak world. Rambling Business flies back from Amsterdam, across the pond, as the British call the Atlantic Ocean.
And it wasn't frozen, I assume.
No, I don't think so. That's like an apocalyptic scenario. The entire Atlantic Ocean is frozen. But we're going to head back to the cradle of American Revolution and democracy, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Rick spoke with Carmen De Guglielmo of Carmen's Famous Italian Hoagies and Cheesesteaks, probably where I want to be buried.
Yes, yes, I know. You would.
I would.
I know. After you eat one of those, you thought you had gone to heaven.
And that's in the historical Reading Terminal Market. Stick around for Carmen's history and a secret to their success, which catapulted them to the top of the very crowded, legendary Philly cheesesteak market.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of competition for that.
Yeah, I know. And these guys are the best.
Of course, stay tuned for our tax deals and business takeaways coming up.
Pete De Guglielmo worked as a general contractor in the historical area of Philadelphia, which I would imagine as a general contractor in that area, that would be kind of challenging because you've got some old structures.
Yeah, you don't want to, you have to be very careful when you're replacing stuff that it still looks, you know, authentic.
Yeah. In 1983, he purchased a store for his sister and served cheesesteaks. Now, sounded like a good thing to do in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But it was a hit. It was a hit. And not long after that, his son purchased a store and opened up a second location in the Bellevue Hotel. And then later in the famous Reading Terminal.
Yeah,
it's Reading.
I said Reading.
Yeah, I think it's Reading. Yeah,
I mean, Reading is like the railroad.
Right. Now, the son that purchased it was named Rocco. I love that name.
That's a great name.
From Philadelphia.
Rocco from Philly.
Oh, I love it. Isn't that great?
See, Grant, I don't even know if that's a Philly accent. It probably wasn't. I'm very sorry, Philadelphia.
I mean, my Italian grandfather used to call me Ricardo. Mm-hmm. He should have called me Rocco.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. But that's not on the West Coast. You know, you can't be a Rocco from Culver City, California.
No, Rocco from Carpinteria. Doesn't work that way.
Well, in 1997, the other son, Carmen, purchased the Bellevue restaurant from Rocco. And then finally in 2002, Carmen purchased the Reading Terminal location, which is where we saw it. Now, the terminal has a very interesting relationship with its tenants, which I found out through him. It just doesn't give licenses to anybody. It's not like you walk in there and you say, hey, I want to open up a restaurant. They say, oh, great, we got one just over here, you know, for you. Or we want to open up a novelty store or anything like that. You know, they just don't have that. I mean, it's very, very popular and everybody wants to get in there.
And so they have a lot of options on who they choose.
That's right. Exactly. And so he told me, he said, if they just gave it to anybody, then you'd have like 80 hoagie cheesesteaks stands.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many cheesesteak places in Philadelphia. So he's one of the few that were good enough to get in there and to stay in there. Now, there's no franchises in the Reading Terminal Market.
Which makes sense, because a lot of these historical-type places don't want to throw a Starbucks and a McDonald's.
Right. And what's so interesting that I saw, and it didn't really dawn on me until we were driving down the street, and down the street was the B&O Terminal.
That they based Monopoly on?
That's right, both of these.
Is that set in Philadelphia?
That's right. Isn't that great?
I was just making a joke. No. And I stumbled on some history.
That's right. So I jumped into a big shoe and I went down the street.
Yeah, but I always preferred the hat.
No, but I was amazed by that. You know, I'm actually living in a game that I played.
See
my
a
whole
guy
life.
With a monocle and a mustache carrying two bags of money? Did mom completely ruin you?
Yeah, I know. She always does. She is terrible to play against.
She is vicious.
She's vicious. She is, really. I mean,
she would have been a great robber baron.
Yeah, that's right.
She looks great in a monocle.
Yeah, that's right. All she needs is a monocle.
And a mustache. Fake mustache.
So the thing I also learned about the Reading Terminal market is that 7 million people pass through that every year.
That's a lot.
Can you imagine a small business person that can say anywhere in this country,
foot traffic,
that 7 million people pass in front of us every year? That's amazing. I mean, that's amazing. It's amazing. You can actually gauge on how much inventory to keep.
Yeah.
Or food, you know.
Well, I mean, getting foot traffic past your businesses is so hard for everyone, you know, west of the Rockies, where things are farther apart. And
right.
Yeah, but I can imagine having like a 7 million people stroll through. The smells of Philly cheesesteak probably pull a lot of them in.
Oh, yeah. It was good. It was good. Now, across the street's convention center is one of the reasons why it gets a lot of traffic. So the location is great. Now, Carmen and I talked for a while, and he told me why his hoagies are the best. And you know, he didn't say it like, well, I'm the best, and it's because I say I'm the best. But he basically went through why they're the best and why they made certain decisions and why those decisions translated into their quality sandwiches. So first of all of our products are local. So the cheesesteak business on the West Coast, you'd have to get all your ingredients from the other side of the country.
Yeah.
So it's not fresh. So they get all their stuff local, which is a big cheesesteak area, you know, at least the ingredients, and they're all local, and they're not traveling on a train for 3 days or 4 days or an airplane or sitting on a tarmac somewhere in an airport, you know. He said the way to think about it, he said, is that it's like the sourdough in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's much better in San Francisco because it's fresh. And he said out here in the Tri-State area, we have great rolls that are just for what they use for
hoagie rolls.
Hoagie rolls, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I had a roommate from Chicago, and their you know, parents sent him this box from a different hoagie place, you know, in their hometown, and it had the rolls with it. They were really good.
So he said this tri-state area, he told me tri-state. Now I'm getting my geography going. Okay, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. I guess that's what he means, tri-state. I'm sorry, I'm ignorant about this, but I drove in the two states.
Yeah. I don't know.
So he told us this. And by the way, he was introduced to us by Rita, our wonderful web person, who actually built our website, if you want to go there. She actually drove us around and introduced us to Carmen and some other people there, which was wonderful. So the Tri-State area has great rolls. And they're also able to acquire the right cheese from regional dairies. Now, we've been through cheeses a lot. We've had Maui
goat cheese.
We've been up to Santa Barbara. We've been all over the place.
That's the thing about cheese, though. It's like very regional because a lot of it's, you know, about the, like sourdough.
Yeah.
It's about the local bacteria.
Right. And you know, we've been up to Sonoma. You've been to Sonoma, right? Sonoma Jack. Those things, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, these cheeses
Monterey Jack.
What
you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, Sonoma Jack's what I know. Monterey Jack, I know of, but I never seen it in a cheese-making place. I did that in Sonoma. So they have their own special cheeses back there. And their steaks are also special, too. They're from the Midwest. And they are specific meat. They have no fat and no grizzle. Now, that's a big deal. I mean, that's a really big deal, having a grizzle.
You don't want to have a very chewy, cartilaginous piece of cheesesteak.
I mean, how many times have you put like a steak sandwich in your mouth and you're pulling out pieces of fat?
That's terrible.
Yeah. I know. But they don't have that. And I can speak from firsthand knowledge because I stood there for a half an hour watching them make the sandwiches. And it was amazing. They were just cutting this meat up with the, you know, small knife because they didn't have any fat and no grizzle.
Yeah,
just boom, boom, boom. It was amazing. They also use fresh vegetables. But what he did to cut down on preparation time, which of course passes down to lowering the price, is that they don't cut them. They order from a company already cut. Now, I guess we've seen that in markets, I guess, a little like celery or something But these guys have
onions.
More than that. Yeah. So these guys have a lot of that in there, and that works. Now, the one thing that they don't use, which our family restaurant used to use, I'm so ashamed to say it now, canned mushrooms.
Wow, they were doing stuff in the 50s when everything was canned, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And mushrooms don't grow in California. It's too hot.
That's right. That's true. It is too
Except,
hot.
Except, you know, you get them in Berkeley and that area.
The psychedelic mushrooms.
No. Oh, I was talking about real mushrooms. People
oh, really?
Forage for morels and
whatever. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Carmen's does not use canned mushrooms. They have fresh mushrooms with that alone is worth the trip there. Just that alone. You know, you don't have to get excited about the rolls if you don't want to, or the beef. Just the fact that they have fresh mushrooms is amazing. Mm. And the steaks are so thin, they have to be cooked quickly. So again,
Which
I watched this.
Which also cuts down the on the time it takes for people to wait and the labor costs.
And also overcooked steaks creates what? Tough steaks.
Tough steaks, yeah.
Right, yeah, so they do.
Tastes like shoe leather.
Right.
Never trust someone who likes a well-done steak.
Yeah, I know, and put ketchup on it.
Yeah.
I know. Now, the interesting thing about what he said as far as a business point of view is he said, in Philly, you have to be on your A game all of the time. Because if you're not, the Reading throws you out.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
They have so many people wanting to go there, they can be that selective.
I know. I mean, here's the thing. It's the Philly cheesesteak capital of the world. You are in the top location of the Philly cheesesteak capital of the world. And I wonder if they got anything into their lease that says, hey, if you're not up to the right standards, you're out in the street.
It's like a morality clause, but for sandwiches.
That's right.
Deliciousness clause.
We're sending it over to B&O.
Yeah. That's the worst railroad.
Well, if you own all four of them, you get to charge $200 to people.
The railroads were never worth it.
Oh, I guess you're right. They weren't. Yeah. Oh, well.
It's like people who did that bought the utilities. You're like, that doesn't...
No, it doesn't work.
You
can't
build houses on it.
You know, it only works, I think, if, you, if you're playing and you start to lose and you turn off the lights in the room and say, hey...
The utilities.
I own the utilities.
Oh, you're, my gosh.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I'll do that with your mom sometimes. She'll really get mad at me.
She will.
And then I'll actually hit the board and knock over her hotel. another thing that happened was very interesting is President Obama even stopped by there and bought several of these cheesesteaks in 2010. In other words, he went to the top.
Yeah.
The top went to the top.
Yeah, they're right? And he chose them. Yeah.
He chose them. Now, when we were there, we noticed that they actually had a line. They were actually remodeling a place across from it to be even bigger because they needed the room.
So they're going to hop across.
This is across the aisleway.
Yeah.
Just across the aisleway. But where we were standing in line was not even in front of the restaurant. It was across from the restaurant in the aisleway. 20 people standing in line, waiting. And they were just like churning them out, you know, And more people get in line. And it's just amazing. So I ordered the Franklin sandwich, which is what he told me to order. And why it was so good, which I didn't know, because he said, hey, go ahead and order the Franklin. You'll like that. I didn't even look to see what was in it.
Yeah.
It has American cheese and Philadelphia cream cheese.
Ooh, yeah.
What better place to order a sandwich with Philadelphia cream cheese than in Philadelphia?
Right from the tap.
Right from the tap.
It's on tap there, right? It's like beer. You just cream cheese comes out. A block of cream cheese.
Hey, he should do that.
That would be a good gimmick.
That'd be a great gimmick, Carmen. If you're listening to this, you got to do that. You got to have a tap. And it's got to be in the shape of a cow, and it's got to moo.
You love things that are shaped like cows that moo.
I know.
I'm so glad that ice cream scoop that you had ran out of batteries.
I want that for Father's Day.
No.
I want that.
I refuse.
So Karma is also featured the next weekend after we were there on Food Paradise, which was on the Travel Channel.
Oh, so he took a step down?
That's okay. We will.
Food Paradise has always taken our sides.
I know. That's right. They're always taking our lead. So it was great. We really had a great time eating our sandwiches with Judy and Rita. We all ordered a sandwich and had a great time.
To learn more about Carmen's, go to Facebook and type in Carmen's Famous Italian Hoagies and Cheesesteaks. And for some reason, it was written down in all caps, so maybe you have to put it in all caps.
It's because they can't see.
Yeah, that's You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips.
www.ramblingbusiness.com.
Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you about strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
Woo.
And since we're talking about the founding of the country, founding fathers, all that, we're going to talk about the Stamp Act. Mm-hmm. And the Stamp Act wasn't technically a tax, but it placed a staggering penalty on using a pen name in pamphlets or newspapers. A person who's found to be using a pseudonym would be charged a whopping £20, which was the equivalent to thousands of dollars today.
Wow.
I guess for like transparency purposes? Like
I don't know.
Democracy? You want to know who's the person claiming it?
I don't know. I'm glad Mark Twain didn't write in those days, right?
Yeah, but this was in colonial America. It was probably because so many colonists were writing inflammatory things
about
the British.
Right, okay,
that they would
there it goes, yeah.
Them,
yeah. But they called this the phony tax?
The phony. You're a phony! Now it's time for our travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do in the Philadelphia area.
You know, sometimes when we give travel tips, there are things that you may not have heard of before because it's something that we just happened to discover we went there.
Like the tap for the cream cheese.
One of the things, though, that sometimes what we do is we will give very obvious things, but maybe the better way to do it, because you haven't been there, maybe to Philadelphia. One of the main attractions, which is obvious in visiting Philadelphia, which I really wanted to see, was Independence Hall.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you get there? What do you do? How do you get tickets? How do you get in? You know, that whole thing. So basically, to get on the 20-minute tour, you go to the National Park Service Visitor Center, which is right down the parkway. It's real close to it. And they got a tour, and get a tour the next day, okay? So you get a free ticket, and they issue tickets for every tour. I think it's like 20-minute tours, something like that. So what we did is we got there first thing in the morning, and we got two tickets for the tour the next day at 4 o'clock. I think that was the first one they had open. Because they, you know, this is packed.
Yeah, people are booking
it. Oh, yeah, this packed. And the tour was well worth it. I really strongly suggest you go to it. And if you go to it, do a little research first. Read a little bit about it. Read a little bit about the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and come up with some questions, because the tour guides, the park rangers, are really good at answering questions. They speak very fast. They only got 20 minutes to lead you through this whole building.
Yeah, talk about all the history of the
family. Yeah, I know, right? But they do a great job of answering questions, because what they'll do is they'll stop and say, okay, any questions? And people had a couple of good questions. And so make sure you got some questions. Then you can walk across the street. You can see the Liberty Bell. And here's another tip. If you don't want to wait in line and go inside, which we did not because we didn't want to wait into another line, I guess you had to get tickets for that too, I guess. I didn't really check. They actually have a viewing window that's right next to it.
You just get to see it.
Yeah, just get to see it. I mean, I don't have to, you know, you can't touch it when you go inside. So it's like there's a rope on the other side of you.
There's not huge amounts of detail. If you can see the crack in the Liberty Bell, then that's the important part.
Right, exactly. And that was on the other side, actually, from what I was looking at.
Oh.
But
you got to see it looked like it was whole. Yeah.
That's right. It was a good side. But still, I got to see it. And I didn't have to waste another hour or whatever to do that. And that was cool, too.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is set a goal to always work much harder than your employees. I mean, it's your business after all, and basically leading by example and being the hardest worker. Because, you know, we've all, a lot of us have worked in small businesses where the staff is carrying the boss.
Yeah.
And it leads to pretty bad morale problems. So.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that was a business tip directly from Carmen.
Yeah.
He tries to work harder than his employees. Number two, don't compromise on your product. Carmen made a special effort to use fresh ingredients, as we said, instead of getting frozen or things that just won't taste good after they're cooked.
The third thing to think about is when you're budgeting, don't scrimp on your main product, like the food that makes it up. I mean, that's what people are coming for. But you can spend a little less money on items that you provide on the side, stuff that, like, you know, whether it's condiments that people don't eat all the time, or forks and knives, or maybe even napkins.
Right.
Because, I mean, people are there for the food. They're not there to have the fanciest, thickest napkins possible.
Well, you know what they had on calling numbers? You know how you take little numbers, right? You know what they did? When you got your order, they gave you a card from a deck of cards. We had like the Ace of Hearts.
That's so fun.
And so they would do, all right, Ace of Hearts. Where's your Ace of Hearts? Yeah. Okay. You know, and just give it back to them and they reuse it.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what they did. It was great.
Rather than having a number dispenser that you have to buy more numbers for.
Yeah, I know. But that was a good example of how he did that. Number four, be so proud of your food product that you would feed it to your family.
Yeah. That's important.
That'd be terrible.
Because your family often will be working there, so you better.
That too. Yeah, I know. It'd be terrible if your family wants to eat. Your kid says, I'm hungry. I'll only eat here. Yeah, I got to go across
I'll
the street.
I'll order out.
Go to Rocco's over there. You know, if you wouldn't feed your family the food, why would you feed anybody else? Why would anybody else eat your food?
And the fifth thing to think about is keep the momentum going. Don't lose steam in pushing your brand, even if you are having to move places, like they had to got to open up a second store.
Right.
But even if you have multiple locations, you still have to build a brand for each of them and a brand collectively so that people will go, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, if I'm uptown, I'll go to the other one.
And they're moving into the bigger store right across the aisleway, which is going to help your customers.
They're already in the coolest marketplace, and yet they're still expanding. And that's how you know a company's healthy. Now it's time to answer a question from one of our listeners. We have an email from Skip. I have a seasonal business that sells holiday apparel. Huh, I wonder if it's a Christmas or Halloween.
Trees, Christmas tree. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Valentine's
we're
Day.
Coming up. There's not a lot of Thanksgiving, apparel. So.
St. Swithin's Day.
Boxing Day. I have a business selling holiday apparel. I have to buy all of my inventory up front. How do I manage this without having sales first?
Well, the first thing, Skip, is that you can go to your bank and get a credit line. And banks give credit lines for this specific purposes where you can actually draw down and pay back. Also, you can go to the Small Business Administration, which works with banks that guarantees your loans, helps you get loans. So these are ways that you can do this. But the trick to revolving credit lines is to pay them back.
Yeah.
The interest rates are pretty low compared to credit cards, but still, they turn out to be just a conventional loan. And usually what it is they're like maybe like a 10-year loan. And then what happens after 10 years, they turn into a conventional loan. That's like what Chase Bank has. I know that. Now, other banks may have 5-year loans. Mm-hmm. So that's what they do.
That's all we have for this week. Check out some of our past podcasts where Ramblin' Business has traveled from Maui to Martha's Vineyard, New Orleans to Vancouver, Canada to Norway, San Francisco to Amsterdam, and now here we are back in Philadelphia. Our map on ramblingbusiness.com shows our travels. You can click the little pins in the map to go down and see what podcasts we've done by city and region. But tune in next week when we're going to continue Philadelphia. Going to stay here, big city, lots of stuff to do. When we are going to stay in the Reading Terminal Market by shifting from hoagies to soap. So after you eat a hoagie, it can be messy.
That's right. You need soap, right. There it is.
But till then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.